I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is July 13th, 2008. The subject today is going to be debunking skeptics. This is taken from the website of Winston Wu, who was the subject of last week's podcast. He has compiled a list of 30 arguments that believers can use when debating skeptics. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take these arguments, as many as I can each week, and I'm going to give my replies to his arguments. Now, I'm not going to read his entire argument and then reply, because his style is to throw in many arguments that are logical fallacies, distraction techniques, and, to put it politely, untruths. So what I will do is, every time he says something that requires a response by me, I will break in and I will address him so that you folks listening to the podcast will know, because I'm using the same voice for his written material as I am for my replies. I don't do Phil Hendry voices. So in order for you to know that it's me now giving my reply, I will address Winston, and then I will give my reply, and then I will go back to continuing what he wrote. So I hope that's clear how I intend to do this. And let's start out with argument number one, under the title Debunking Skeptics by Winston Wu. Argument number one is, it is irrational to believe in anything that hasn't been proven. That is the skeptic's position, and Winston Wu is going to debate that. Winston writes, this is the main philosophy behind most skeptical arguments. By proven, skeptics mean proven according to the scientific method, which they consider to be the only reliable method. There are several problems with this argument. First of all, just because something hasn't been proven and established in mainstream science doesn't mean it doesn't exist or isn't true. Winston, that is true. That is why skeptics have never said what you are attributing to them. He continues, if it did, then nothing would exist until proven or discovered. Winston, you are quite correct. Winston goes on, for instance, when acupuncture was first introduced in the West, skeptics and certain scientists claimed that it had no basis. Winston, that is still true. He goes on, and only worked due to the placebo effect because they couldn't understand how it worked. Winston, acupuncture didn't work due to the placebo effect. The placebo effect worked due to the placebo effect. Acupuncture does not work at all. As for your comment, they couldn't understand how it worked, that is because it doesn't work. He goes on, this reflected the typical false thinking of skeptics, that anything they don't understand must be due to superstition or chance. Winston, we do understand that it does not work, and it has nothing to do with superstition or chance. Positive results have been shown to be nothing more than the result of the placebo effect. Winston goes on. However, practitioners and believers knew otherwise and were later validated by extensive studies that have been done to show that it indeed does work for treating various ailments and getting results which placebos can't account for. Winston, that is pure wishful thinking on your part. He goes on. Secondly, just because something hasn't been proven to establish science doesn't mean that it hasn't been proved firsthand to certain people. Winston means people like him. He goes on, established views are not the dictum of all reality. Well, Winston, no one said they were. He goes on, many types of paranormal phenomena have been proved firsthand to eyewitnesses and experiencers. For example, even though the cases of near-death experiences don't prove the existence of an afterlife, at least not yet, those who have experienced them claim that the experience of the separation of body and spirit is firsthand proof to them of an afterlife, just as riding in a car is firsthand proof that cars exist, and they fear death no more. Winston, I don't fear death, and I don't need to delude myself in order to achieve that state. I agree with you that near-death experiences do not prove the existence of an afterlife. As for the spirit you refer to, we are all anxiously awaiting your proof for its existence. I mean real proof, not eyewitness accounts from people who aren't even conscious. He says, those who have out-of-body experiences also make similar claims, and they need no proof, nor do they need to convince anyone. Winston, you just gave us a perfect view of how things in your world work. No proof and no need to convince anyone of anything. Just believe whatever you want and it will all magically come true. He says, these claims are further supported by the fact that in many documented cases, the subject could hear conversations or see things in other rooms and other places, which are later confirmed and verified to be remarkably accurate. Winston, I thought you said they needed no proof. I thought you said they needed to convince no one. So what is this? It sounds like you are offering proof and trying to convince. He goes on, who's to say that they're wrong just because we haven't had the same experiences? That would be equivalent to saying that because I've never been to Japan, everyone else who claims to have been there is mistaken or deluded. Wrong again, Winston. There are many other ways to verify the existence of Japan without actually traveling there. He continues, the same goes for eyewitnesses of ghosts, UFOs, alien abductions, Bigfoot, etc. These sightings and encounters range from the obscure and distant to ones that are crystal clear and at point-blank range, making them much harder to dismiss. Winston, you would think that with all those crystal clear sightings at point-blank range, there would have at least been one single piece of evidence. Winston says, number three, likewise, the Ganzfeld experiments in telepathy done in the early 70s also had repeated success, with receivers in 42 controlled experiments scoring an average of 38% to 45% compared to the chance rate of 25%. The odds of that occurring by chance are less than 1 in a billion. Winston, the Ganzfeld experiments were redone with tighter controls, and the results were very close to the 25% expected by chance. Winston continues, more recently, controlled experiments involving four prominent mediums, accuracy, were done by Dr. Gary Schwartz of the Human Energy Lab of the University of Arizona. These mediums achieved a hit rate of 70 to 90%, even when, in one experiment, they were not allowed to ask any questions of the sitters or see them. Skeptics repeatedly continue to ignore this fact. Winston, if there was even one human who could do that, they would have easily walked away with the $1 million prize that has been offered for many years now by the James Randi Foundation to anyone who can prove they possess paranormal abilities. No one has ever been able to prove they can do what they claim, and the prize remains unclaimed to this day. This in a world of over 6 billion people. Winston continues, a list of studies that produced PSI results, that's PSI, PSI results can be found in Dean Radin's book, The Conscious Universe, The Scientific Truth of Psychic Phenomena. Jesus, Winston, there's a real objective source. Winston goes on, many researchers will tell you that these studies prove that telepathy and micropsychokinesis exist at least on the micro level. The skeptics, of course, will say that these tests yielded impossible results and therefore were not done under properly controlled conditions, or else the researchers' overzealous desire to get PSI results botched the results. But this, of course, reflects their bias and an a priori dismissal of facts that don't fit in with their beliefs. It is not logical to deny the facts that don't support your beliefs. It is more logical to update your beliefs to account for the facts. Winston, that is not how science works. If a scientist has a bias that affects his results, his work will be thrown out by colleagues. Dismissal of facts that don't fit in with beliefs is a perfect description of how the irrational mind works. That would be your mind, Winston. Winston is doing what he does in virtually every one of his arguments, as you will see. The things he accuses scientists and skeptics of are exactly the things that apply instead to him and other irrational thinkers. In other words, he turns everything around, bass-ackwards. He defines rational thinking as irrational and irrational thinking as rational. The scary thing is that he is no different than many other irrational thinkers. His fourth point. Just because something is irrational to skeptics doesn't mean that it is irrational to others who know or believe that it is real. Winston, something is either irrational or it isn't. It isn't a question of who believes it. It is a question of what evidence exists to prove the claim. He continues, skeptics and scientific materialists do not have the monopoly on rational thinking. Winston, I wish you were right. I wish that skeptics and scientific materialists did not have the monopoly on rational thinking. Unfortunately, Winston, you are wrong again. He continues, lots of rational, intelligent, intellectual people believe in God, spiritual dimensions, or that there is more to reality than the material world. Winston, they may be rational in some areas, such as in their jobs or personal relationships. But regarding religion, spiritual dimensions, and other realities, they are irrational by definition. Their beliefs are unsupported. He continues, the skeptic system of rational thinking is not the dictatum by which all things that exist must conform to. This can be easily demonstrated by all the things that skeptics have been wrong about before, such as flight, laws of physics, quantum mechanics, giant squid, etc., proving their fallibility. Winston, the discoveries you cite, such as flight, physics, quantum mechanics, etc., were all given to us by scientists, not by ghosts, not by God, not by aliens. We are not given the answers. We must discover them for ourselves. Your list was meant to be a criticism of science. As usual, you are standing there with egg dripping down your ears because instead, you just did a great job of listing some of science's greatest accomplishments. Now he has a second argument. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. This seems to be the mantra of hard-nosed skeptics. One common way it is presented goes like this. If my friend told me that on the way here he was delayed because his car got a flat tire, then I would believe it because it is an ordinary claim. However, if he claimed that on his way here he was temporarily abducted by aliens in a UFO, then I would not believe his claim because it is extraordinary in nature. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Now, it would help if the skeptics who proclaim this argument specify what they would accept as extraordinary evidence. Otherwise, arbitrarily stating this argument gives one an out no matter what evidence is shown. Winston, I know this is going to come as a shock to you. I'll admit it's even a shock to me, but I completely agree with you. Extraordinary claims require evidence, period. He continues, while it is reasonable to expect a higher standard of evidence for more extraordinary claims, there are nevertheless six difficulties to keep in mind. First, although this rule is good as a general guideline, the fact that three possible alternatives exist make this rule fallible. The first alternative, it is possible for something to exist without leaving behind collectible evidence as a souvenir to us. For example, planes, radio waves, electromagnetism, and light move around without leaving hard evidence, yet they exist. Not true, Winston. If they didn't leave behind hard evidence, we wouldn't know they existed. His second alternative. It is possible for something to exist, yet the evidence for it hasn't been found or understood yet, which is the case for almost every discovery in history, from fire, and wheels to gunpowder and gravity to planets, atoms, and electromagnetism. Very true, Winston, but skeptics already know this. His third alternative. It is possible that the evidence is already there, but that it's subject to interpretation, making it controversial. This is true, for instance, of the alleged mysterious implants found by doctors and surgeons in alleged alien abductees. So even when something leaves a trail, residue, or mark, they are subject to interpretation anyway. Winston, the key is the evidence. It can be persuasive and accepted, it can be bogus and rejected, or it can fall anywhere in between. In the last case, that's what prompts debate. However, trying to elevate bogus evidence to the level of good evidence is just dishonest and doomed to failure. When and if good evidence for alien abduction is produced, then it would be unskeptical to deny it. Number two, Winston says, definitions of extraordinary claims vary based on prior beliefs and experiences. Winston, extraordinary claims are just that. They are claims that defy the laws of nature or stretch the credulity of reason and have nothing to do with prior beliefs and experiences. He goes on, for example, the internal body energy of Qi Gong or Qi Gong is mystical to Westerners, but has been a natural everyday part of life for thousands of years in Asia. Qi is used, felt, and observed by its practitioners much the same as the effects of gravity are felt and observed by us. Winston, you are not even close to reality on this one. Go up on a roof and test the existence of Qi, and then test the existence of gravity. If there was no difference, you win. Otherwise, have a relative notify us where we can send the flowers. He continues, likewise, the concept of astral projection and out-of-body experiences is extraordinary to those who have never experienced them. But for those who experience them regularly, it is an ordinary thing to them that they know is a reality. His third item, different people have different standards for what is extraordinary evidence, depending on your definition. It could be said that we already have some extraordinary evidence for certain types of paranormal claims. Take the following four types of phenomena, for instance. First, UFOs. It can be said that there is extraordinary evidence to support the existence of UFOs from unexplainable photographs, video camera footage, multiple eyewitness sightings, and abduction reports, Air Force radar reports, etc. All of these constitute convincing evidence for some people, but not for others. Although much of it can be explained as misperceptions, natural phenomena, weather balloons, aircraft, birds, balls of lightning, luminous earthlights, etc., there are still many cases which are unexplainable and display features not known of any natural phenomena. Winston, that's why they call them UFOs, because they haven't been identified or explained. That isn't evidence of extraterrestrial visitations. He continues, since it is not always possible for extraordinary things to leave behind some type of tangible evidence, if I saw a UFO at close range and didn't have my camera with me and then it flew away, how am I expected to have extraordinary evidence? Am I supposed to be able to call that UFO back as if it were under my command, or chase it like Superman? The fact that this event happened without our control makes us unable to satisfy this criteria. The same goes with ghosts and other things. But Winston, you want us to believe that with all these millions of supernatural encounters, not one person ever carried a Kodak? His second item, ghosts and spirits. The same goes with ghosts. There are many credible witnesses who have seen ghosts and experienced unexplainable things taking place in haunted houses, such as sudden apparitions, the feeling of an unseen presence, unnatural movement of objects, frequent displacement of things around the house, sounds, voices, etc. Paranormal investigators have even used Geiger counters that detected electrical activity in a haunted area. Winston, bad news. Geiger counters do not detect electrical activity. They detect radiation. His third item, ESP and telepathy. This is also especially true for ESP and telepathy. Experiments under controlled conditions have been done that revealed consistent, well above chance results, which strongly point to the conclusion that ESP and telepathy exist at least to a small degree. I agree, Winston. ESP and telepathy do exist to a small degree, and that small degree would be zero. He continues, this is an obvious double standard which is typical of closed-minded skeptics. Actually, Winston, skeptics are the only ones who are open-minded. They are the only ones capable of changing their beliefs. Winston goes on, besides experiments, countless accounts of psychic experiences abound, both documented and undocumented. The most common type of psychic experience is telepathy, such as when loved ones and close friends from vast distances apart know at the exact time when something traumatic happened to the other. Sometimes every detail of the traumatic event is observed or felt from afar. They are extremely powerful personal proof. I've had a few of these kind myself. Winston, I was going to suggest that you have those friends mentioned above try for the $1 million prize. But now that I know you have this power, I say go for it yourself. His fourth item, mystical experiences. And what about mystical experiences, spiritual enlightenment, being born again, near-death experiences, and out-of-body experiences? These can also be said by those who experience them to be extraordinary evidence as well, because they are often self-authenticating and life-changing in themselves. Experiencers will describe these experiences not as faith-based, but as inner knowing. The fact that these types of experiences are dramatically life-changing makes them extraordinary evidence, simply because ordinary experiences don't alter people's lives in this way. To say that these self-authenticating, life-changing experiences are just pure imagination is closed-minded, to say the least. Winston, you are a salesman's dream. He goes on, I like the example of the person working in an inner office with no windows. A coworker could come in and tell him that it is raining out. If they accept that as truth, it is only a chosen belief. But if they were to go outside themselves and stand in the driving rain and get soaking wet, then that is no longer a chosen belief. That would qualify as actual knowing by direct experience. You cannot really know that what I say is really illogical babble. Winston, that was the first thing you've said that I totally agree with. His fifth item, the argument favors conservatism or retaining the established theory in spite of contrary evidence. This has its pros and cons. Obviously, it makes sense to retain what works until something better comes along. However, when it comes to modifying our paradigms or worldview, we also tend to resist change, even when the data calls for it. This argument, I fear, is used as an excuse for those who resist change. But if we never abandoned theories or expanded them, then science would not make progress. History has shown that progress comes with new discoveries and abandoning old, outdated theories that no longer fit with the new data acquired. Winston, what you said at the end about history completely negates the first part of your argument. You try to make the case that science resists change, and then you admit that progress came when scientists did make the changes. Which is it? And that's all we have time for this week for Winston Wu. The next segment of the show is News from Abroad, and today we go to the United Kingdom, where we get the story. Now, wrong claims can land astrologers, tantrics, and faith healers in jail. In Britain, astrologers can now end up in prison if they fail to warn their prospective customers that their services are not experimentally proven and for entertainment only. So can godmen, tantrics, tarot card readers, faith healers, occultists, fortune tellers, seers, soothsayers, psychics, mantra healers, mediums, and babas. Since May 26, 2008, less than 2 months ago, the flourishing spiritual business in the country estimated to bag an annual income of more than 40 million pounds, has come under the scanner of new customer protection regulations. Result of the biggest overhaul of Britain's consumer laws since 40 years, these regulations are implementing the European Union's Unfair Commercial Practices Directive from May 2005 that will soon govern consumer laws all over Europe. Besides door-to-door sellers, children's advertisements, the new British law targets miracle mongers of all kinds and backgrounds, no matter if they are resident Brits or visiting Indians. It compels them to state in a disclaimer that their services are for entertainment only and that they are not experimentally proven. Such disclaimers have to be well visible for all potential customers, put up on name boards, invoices, printed papers with terms and condition, in advertisements and in websites. If the entertainment-only nature of their services is not made clear to the client before the session, they can be taken to court and will be liable to a prison sentence up to 2 years and a fine up to £5,000. Finally, some progress. The next segment is a new segment that's starting this week and will continue from here on out. It is the science segment. Huge science news in the field of evolution. For years, creationists have demanded that scientists produce proof of evolution actually occurring today. They felt very safe making this demand because they knew that evolution worked extremely slowly and would be next to impossible to catch in the act. They didn't figure on Professor Richard Lemsky of Michigan State University. Lemsky, using the E. coli bacteria, has done just that. He started 20 years ago with 12 colonies of bacteria. E. coli cannot consume citrate, that is citric acid in salt form. His ingenious experiment involved giving the bacteria just enough food to survive but not thrive. But with the food, he also made available to them the undigestible citrate. Over 30,000 generations later, the descendants of the E. coli have evolved to not only consume the citrate, but actually thrive on it. The evolutionary process involved three mutations. The first mutation occurred after more than 20,000 generations. This mutation did not enable the E. coli to metabolize the citrate. However, this mutation was a necessary precursor for the following two mutations. The second mutation allowed the E. coli to somewhat metabolize the citrate. After more than 30,000 generations, the third mutation allowed the E. coli to actually thrive on the citrate, something no other E. coli is capable of doing. This experiment not only showed evolution in action, but showed how it works in detail. The other 11 colonies did not develop the mutation and therefore never developed the ability to survive on citrate. Evolution involves the random mutation of genes, which are then passed on to offspring. Survival is determined through a process known as natural selection. Why isn't this earth-shattering news splashed all over the television and newspapers? Why is it likely that you are hearing it here for the first time? Well, we live in a Christian nation, 75%, plus another 10 to 15% are believers in gods of other faiths. The media will show you every friggin' slice of pizza that someone finds with an image of Christ, or a piece of toast with some lines on it that they claim looks like the Virgin Mary. But as you've noticed, scientific breakthroughs that destroy biblical dogma are not things you're likely to find on your TV set. Naturally, this scientist has come under immediate attack by creationists. If you follow the link below, you can read an exchange between Professor Lemsky and the creationist founder of Conservapedia. After reading this link, you will get an idea of what scientists face today when they try to do honest experimentation. That link is www.conservapedia.com. I'll spell Conservapedia. I'll let you spell com. Conservapedia is C-O-N-S-E-R-V as in Victor A-P as in Paul, E-D-I-A, conservapedia.com/conservapedia:Linsky_dialogue. Linsky is spelled L-E-N-S-K-I. Dialogue ends at the G. That's D-I-A-L-O-G. Repeating, www.conservapedia.com/conservapedia:Linsky_dialogue. It is well worth the time. The final segment, as usual, famous quotes. Today's famous quote comes from Bill Maher, born January 20th, 1956, which makes him 52 years old. Unusual, this guy is still alive. Most of our famous quotes come from dead people, so I hope I'm not jinxing Bill Maher here. Bill Maher is an American stand-up comedian, television host, political commentator, actor, and author. He hosted the late-night television talk show Politically Incorrect on Comedy Central and ABC. He is currently the host of Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO. He also began hosting an internet-exclusive talk show on Amazon.com entitled Amazon Fishbowl. Maher is known for his political satire and socio-political commentary. His commentaries target a wide swath of topics, from the right wing to the left wing, bureaucracies of many kinds, political correctness, Hollywood, the mass media, and persons in positions of high political and social power. He supports the legalization of cannabis, that's marijuana, and gay marriage, and serves on the board of PETA. PETA is the Society for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. He is also an outspoken critic of organized religion and is an advisory board member of the Reason Project. I have two quotes from Bill Maher. The first one, "We are a nation that is unenlightened because of religion. I think that religion stops people from thinking. I think it justifies crazies. I think flying planes into a building was a faith-based initiative. I think religion is a neurological disorder. If you look at it logically, it's something that was drilled into your head when you were a small child. It certainly was drilled into mine at that age. And you really can't be responsible when you are a kid for what adults put into your head." Okay, I think he made himself pretty clear on the subject of religion. His second quote, "Why does the Bush administration want a constitutional amendment about weddings? Hey, birthdays are important too. Why not include them in the great document? Let's make a law that gay people can have birthdays, but straight people get more cake. You know, to send the right message to the kids." And that's the show for July 13th, 2008.
Are you ready, Boots? Start walking.